Blog Talk Radio.
Australia, Caboolture. This is Trish Springsteen, and you are listening to Step Up and Speak Out with Trish Live Radio Show. I am delighted to be here this morning, and I hope that your day, wherever you are around the world, is just as good. As I said, I'm Trish Springsteen. I'm a multi-international award winner, speaker, mentor, coach, international best-selling author, and most importantly this morning, radio host. My passion is helping and mentoring my clients to have the confidence and self-belief to leverage their business with speaking and communication. And typically I work with introverts, authors, and advocates to help them start their journey to become an influencer. Now, numbers to check in. If you're in North America, you're listening in on 646-564-9508. You can pass your questions on there. If you're outside North America, just follow the link that you're on, tobtr.com/1039281, and you can follow that link to post your questions for our guests on that link. And of course, you can also PM me your questions on Facebook, and I will pass them on to my guest. Now, today we are going to be speaking with Des Walsh. Now, Des will be joining us very shortly, having a few technical issues, which sometimes crop up every now and then, and he's working on getting those sorted out. Now, Des is an executive business coach. He's a LinkedIn expert and trainer, and he's a certified social media strategist. And we'll be going to discuss the impact of the rapid development of artificial intelligence, virtual reality, and augmented reality on the profession and industry of coaching. Or as Des has said, the rise of the coaching robots. Now, I'm really looking forward to speaking with Des about this. So hopefully we will have him on very soon. He's working on getting those technical issues sorted out. Meanwhile, as usual, we talk about a frequently asked question at the beginning of each of my shows. Now, today's question came up from when I was doing some corporate work just recently, and we were doing a session on telephones and how to handle difficult customers. One of the things was that, well, what is one of the basic things? How can we help and handle difficult customers? And I think one of the most important things from my perspective is to remember that don't take it personally. If you've got someone who's in front of you complaining or having an issue or they're really being difficult, or if they're on the end of the phone, you need to just step back and realize that it's not always you that has been the person. Be objective. Listen for the facts, not the emotions. So take a step out. And in the main, most customers are annoyed at the situation. They're not annoyed with you personally, of course, unless you have erred, in which case, if you've made a mistake, the best thing then is to just acknowledge, sorry, made a mistake, acknowledged it, fix it, and move on. However, if it's not you personally that's done that, you can be objective and not let your emotions become engaged. And you'll find if you do that, you step back and you think to yourself, no, nope, it's not me personally, it's just the situation, it's the issue that the client has, then you'll find it a lot easier to deal with emotional clients. So that's one of the things that I believe is the foundation of looking and helping with difficult customers. Now, I'm just going to check to see. I think Des is still trying to get on, and I'll see how he's going. Hopefully, we'll have him on very shortly. Now, one of the other things, then, to remember when you're dealing with difficult customers, and that is that you are the only person that can control your attitude, actions, and your choices. You cannot control the customer's actions or choices or behavior. So you are the person who looks after your own attitude. So if you work on your actions and behavior, you'll find that this will probably, in most cases, have a positive influence on the customer's behavior. So if you say to yourself, it's not me personally, I'm going to look at this objectively, I'm going to listen to the facts and not the emotion, then you will find that you will not be engaging in a blame game. And when if you don't engage in that blame game, then the customer is usually going to have nothing to work off, and they'll end up being a lot more approachable, probably calm down a bit more. So if you refuse to argue with the customer and you're patient, you're calm and objective, that will take the wind out of their sails and they will start to respond logically and less emotionally. With the emotion gone, you can then get to the core of the problem and deal with it. So it's not easy. I will say that to you. It's not always easy when we're faced with a difficult client. It's not going to, you can very easily get into that issue. You can very easily buy into that blame game. But if you step back and don't get into that, then you'll find it a lot easier to work with clients and with difficult customers. Now, I'll be sharing tips, techniques, and strategies each show. So if there is something you would like answered, you can email me on info@trischel.com.au, and then tune into the next show to hear your answer. Now, don't forget, you can also follow me on my show. That way, if you follow me and you go to the link at blogtalkradio.com/speakoutwithtrish, and you press that lovely red button there, that means you will follow my show and you will never miss out on hearing your frequently asked question answered, because you will get notification of the show. Now, I'm delighted to say that, see, there we go. So excited to say that Des has managed to sort out those issues and he is in the studio with us. Welcome, Des. How are you this morning?
I'm well. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good. So I don't know what happened with the going on the desktop computer, but I'm on the phone now. So if that's working, let's stick with it.
That's okay. I will ask you if you could just up your volume a little bit. You are a little bit faint, and I know we've got so much to discuss this morning. We want to make sure that our listeners can hear us. So see if you could just up that volume a little bit for us. Oh, okay. We are having lovely difficulties this morning. Des has just dropped out of our studio, so I know he's going to be back in as soon as he can. I love it. Absolutely love it. I really do love the technology that we get and what we do, and I'm not sure that we are always going to have these issues. I mean, this is part of being alive. It happens to us now and then, and we have to just work through that. Now, I'm hoping that Des will get that issue sorted out and that he'll be able to get back in again. Just dropped out, so he will be back. Now, as I was talking, we have my frequently asked questions. So please, if you do want a question answered, just drop a line to me, as I said, to that email contact or PM me on Facebook. And, okay, as I said, then subscribe to the show to make sure you never miss out on that. Now, one of the things I probably want to talk about with Des is, and this is the reason why I was very interested in getting Des onto the show, is that, you know, technology is advancing at a great rate. It's a big, fast world out there. And as many of you may have heard, one of my last shows, we were talking about virtual conferencing and the fact that quite a lot of conferences now will get their guest speakers to live stream. And so you're not actually there at the conference, you live stream. And there was a lot of pros and cons about that. You know, it's great. It means sometimes it's great for the organisers, because often that it cuts down on the expenses of getting a guest speaker in. But I think sometimes you miss out on not being able to connect with that guest speaker live at the conference. And that sort of met me. I met Des when we were doing a panel together. And we were doing a panel on award winning, because if you do an Enter Business Awards, it's a great way to add credibility to your business. And as you'll hear when I introduce Des and he gets back on, he's just won an award. It was the recipient of the President's Award from the International Association of Coaching. Anyway, we got to speaking and having a great conversation, Des and I, and we were talking about, he was telling me about his keynote speech that he's going to be doing in December about coaching in the cyber physical world. And I was talking to him about the pros and cons of virtual conferencing, of how event organisers just get you to can live stream, and also how now that a lot of people who are doing conferencing online and they're doing virtual summits online. And we were talking about the pros and cons of that with, you know, virtual making connection in person, but also then the opportunities available to be doing things like that online. Ah, I think we've got Des back again, so we'll do that. So what happened was that from our conversation, we got to chatting about technology, and we got to chatting about how we've got robots, we've got virtual reality, we've got artificial intelligence, and Des was sharing with me some of his ideas. So, hi Des, we're back again.
Okay, can you hear me?
It's a little bit better. Hopefully you can bump it up just a bit.
I can't do much more. I think I've got it on full volume, but
okay.
Can you hear
better? That's better. I can hear you then. That's a bit better.
Okay. I'm sorry about this. We've had some computer challenges. These things happen. It's a wonderful thing when you're talking about really advanced technology and it can't get basic technology to work, or what we regard as basic now.
I know. I just love it. I love the way sometimes, and I think that's one of the reasons why I love live radio, because you just have to go with the flow and work out these issues. So welcome, Des. I'm just going to introduce you and do a bit about your bio, and then we'll get to discussing some of the things that I think. I was just explaining to people how we met and how fascinated I was with the cyber physical world. So people, I'm just going to introduce Des. Des Walsh is an executive business coach. He's a LinkedIn expert and trainer and a certified social media strategist. He's had a 14-year career as Australian Federal and State Government Senior Executive in a lot of portfolios, developing and managing major national and federal state projects in education, the arts, cultural development, major events, and equal opportunity. So he comes with a great variety of experience. He's been a CEO, a communications consultant, and industry training specialist. And most importantly, from my perspective, for the past 14 years, he's been a business coach. And Des is passionate about helping business owners and executives fulfill their potential. He's been actively engaged for over 20 years in promoting the business opportunities in the digital economy. And he's a certified specialist in social media strategy. He's also the co-author of one of the first ever books on the LinkedIn platform called LinkedIn for Recruiting. And he's been blogging since 2003, and he's a podcaster in his Let's Talk Leadership show. And as I said, I met Des because we were on an award lunch, and that was because in September 2017, Des was the recipient of the International Association of Coaching, that's the IAC President's Award for 2017 for outstanding services. And in December, he will be delivering the keynote address at the IAC International Conference in Colombo, Sri Lanka, the topic being coaching in the cyber physical world. Des lives near the beach on Australia's Gold Coast and coaches mostly via Skype, Zoom, and phone. Welcome, Des. I'm so excited to be getting into our conversation. How are you?
I'm very well, Trish, and thank you for the great introduction. I'm really well, really well, yes. Looking forward to this.
That's good. Excellent. Now, do you want to just share a little bit of a background? I've covered a bit on your bio, but I guess for me, I wanted to sort of get a bit of an idea from you how you really got involved with this cyber, virtual reality, artificial intelligence. When did that pop up on your radar screen as a coach?
Yeah. Look, I've had this from way back in my executive roles. I've had this interest in how you can use technology effectively to help with communication, to help with productivity and so on. And I also have a kind of a humanistic view of how you can do that without destroying the livelihoods of vast numbers of people and the income of their family, you know. So finding that kind of balance, that rather than just saying, every bit of technology is wonderful and will do wonderful things. So what happened was that having that interest in the technology and in the internet, and you know, really was doing consulting on web big web projects back in the last century. Wow. I got into blogging in the beginning of this century, about 14 years ago, and I went to a conference in San Francisco, and there was I'd sort of started a bit to get into some of the online world of online groups and so on, and the World Wide Web. LinkedIn was not on the radar at that point, and but blogging, I got hooked on blogging through that conference, a presentation on blogging, where I remember the title was still "Become an E-Celebrity with Blogging," and it wasn't that I wanted to be an E-Celebrity. I wanted to promote my coaching business in a broader world, and from that led people started asking me about blogging for business, and I wrote a book about that because I had a group on LinkedIn bloggers, it was called. I got invited to co-author this book on LinkedIn. And it kind of went from there. I sort of tried to learn more and more about how to use social media effectively. And then I think through those social media connections, I became aware that this is the kind of next transformation. You know, you think of big, the massive computer. I had an office within my living memory where I had about 20 people working for me and had a whole room dedicated to the computer, air conditioning, locked up at night, all that sort of thing, you know. And now we probably have the power of that computer system in one desktop or laptop. So I got interested in all of that and how you can do things more efficiently. But now you've got that big move there from the big mainframes to the desktop to then smartphones. And now you've got this whole new, it's like an inflection point in the development of technology as it affects business, from very large corporations through to the solo entrepreneur, and that here am I talking with you and the world through this little handset in my hand, and probably within a few years I'll be using a headset which will do all the things my phone does, and it'll be hands-free. And I can do that to some extent already. I've got a couple of devices here in my office that do amazing things, you know, just a little headset that can do live streaming, and eventually it'll have a phone built into it and so on, and devices that will respond to head movements and words. I mean, already I can talk to this phone. I won't do it at the moment, but I can ask Google some questions, you know, and get some information. Now, this is early days, but I'm fascinated by it, and over the years I've really indulged a bit of a capacity of mine to try and look a bit over the horizon. I'm actually trained as a historian, but I like looking to the future rather than just the past. And I see this as being a kind of potential tidal wave that's is already sweeping through a number of industries. You know, here in Australia, Trish, as you'd know, a week or so ago, one of our big banks announced it had made a $6 billion profit. And it was on the same day it announced it was letting 6,000 people go. Now, that's 6,000 individuals, 6,000, maybe not 6,000 families, but a lot of families, a lot of communities being affected. And it's all by digitization. You know, it's all the digital revolution. And this augmented reality, virtual reality, artificial intelligence is all part of that. And I think it was the great author Alvin Toffler, who wrote a book many years ago called Future Shock, who said something like, the future comes too fast and in the wrong order. You know, it's not something we organize, but it's something that happens. And I think it's, anyway, that's how I got into all of this.
It's a bit scary, isn't it? Because Future Shock is right in what he says. For some reason, we seem to have blinders on. We don't really look far enough into the future, and it does catch us out. And the big problem is, and I think we're going to discuss a little bit more, is it can catch you out in your industry if you're not prepared. How can we get prepared for this? What are the things that we should be aware of? How should we be getting, looking forward to it?
Great question. And you know, and I've just referred back to that lunch where we met. I talked to a couple of coaches who were very accomplished people, And they said, oh, it's not going to affect us when I talked about this. And I didn't, you know, it wasn't appropriate to sort of have a long discussion at that moment. I think we were sitting down for lunch or something. And then, but within about the same week, I was with a group of young techies who specialize in artificial intelligence and machine learning and so on. And they were probably half of that group of 30 or so people, mostly men, were quite blithely telling me that the time will come when coaches will be irrelevant because robots can do it all. So you got this two extremes, you know, where the robots will take over. Welcome to our new robot overlords, some people think. My feeling is that's not a future I want to contemplate. What can we do is a great question. So first of all is we can get informed. And there are ways of getting informed. There are groups that you can join online where, you know, people discuss these things, not from a technical point of view, but from a kind of regular person's business point of view, etc. So I try to encourage people to look at it in, I'm looking at it in the world of coaching, but this can apply to a whole lot of other fields in caring, in caring industries, you know, in health, people who are doing what, you know, service industries, where more and more activities are being taken over by machines, and where there are still some things that humans do better. And I believe for the foreseeable future, I hope forever, some things humans will do better. And they tend to be things that involve empathy, that involve an understanding of nuance, of the paradox of human life, you know, the things that don't respond easily to logic, you know, that these human capacities that we bring to bear in so many walks of life. Coaching is the one that I specialize in. Other people will make their own teaching, school teaching, for instance. There will be robots that can do certain rote-type things for school teaching, but there'll be other things where you need the teacher's judgment about children and then older people and their moods and their capacities for learning, etc. So I divide it into three things in the world of coaching. One is the coaching process. That's it. You or me sitting down with a client or with a group and working with them to help them create the futures they want and to deal with the issues that come up, all of that sort of thing. So there are already effects there, and I'll come back to that. The second is the coaching as a practice or as a business. So we have, if we're not just doing this as a hobby, we have business goals, we have the usual business challenges anybody has in large or small business. And the third area is, what about our clients? The clients we're working with are working in this world. Let's say we have a client who works for, who's an executive with that big bank we were talking about, and suddenly you or I get a call saying, I've just been told I'm out of work. Other banks are doing the same thing. They're laying people off, financial institutions. We know that, and your client is saying, I know because of what I've been working on, that more and more of the work we thought was something we'd do for life is now being done by machines. You know, so what do I do? So the third thing, I think, is to be aware of what's happening in the industries in which our clients work or in which the people we would like to work with work. And there will be opportunities there. It'll be very challenging, and I can come back to that in a moment. So I go back to saying, first of all, know what's happening. Secondly, I think be willing to learn. It's a lifelong learning. When I started coaching back in 14 years ago, I had the great privilege of having a workshop with one of the great leaders, Thomas Leonard, who founded the International Association of Coaching, Coach University, International Coach Federation, Coachville. He was an extraordinary man, and I had the great privilege of being in a workshop with him, and I looked at what he was doing, and I thought, I can do this, and I didn't mean I could do it as well as he could, still learning on that, but I could also go on learning. This was going to be something where opportunities and challenges would keep opening up, and that's proved to be true. And here's the big one, the cyber physical revolution, you know, bigger than I anticipated back then. For me, it's exciting. For some people, it can be really frightening. And, you know, I think a bit of healthy fear is not a bad thing. Otherwise, we'd walk across the road when the light's not green, you know.
I think I agree with you there. There is two ways to it, and it's going to happen. I think it's an inevitable change.
It's happening already. You've got IBM Watson, the IBM artificial intelligence machine. It has, if you go on the IBM site and search, you'll find that it's got a coach module to help people with coaching. I've actually seen a demonstration of some software, which is now, the developer told me he's selling it to one of the big consulting organizations, working with them, and it goes through a process. It asks coach-type questions. Now, there's some questions that all of us as coaches ask, you know, like, so how are you today? And so what did you want to talk about? What's the big issue coming up for you? And a machine can be trained to ask a number of those questions. When I saw a demonstration, I realized that what the machine was doing was something quite, the robot, you know, was doing something, which is the algorithm, whatever you like to call it, was doing something which was quite neat, which was asking questions, answering questions with questions. Now, there comes a point where the client is going to say, hold on a minute, you know, you're just leading me down a path of repetition, but the machines will get better. Google Translate 12 months ago was not as good as Google Translate is now, because Google threw a huge number of computers at the problem, huge number of people, and they changed the basic algorithmic framework in which Google Translate works. So if you looked at a bit of translation from Japanese or German or whatever into English, now, compared with what Google might have done 2 years ago, it's much, much better. So the machines are learning. And even now, there are artificial intelligence machines being developed which make artificial intelligence machines. So they've observed how the humans do it, and now they're applying that to make their own artificial intelligence. Robots are making robots.
And someone said that's that can be scary. It can be good.
Yeah.
I like what you're saying, because I think we need to be making, and if we're informed, we can then make decisions on how we want to be part of this world.
Yes.
If we don't get informed and make that decision, those are going to be made for us, and we may not like it.
And, you know, there are things we can do. We can look at what we do. Like if I had a factory making widgets, I'd be looking at what can be done, quite frankly, because, you know, robots don't get tired. They don't take annual leave. They don't have sick days. They just keep going, you know, 24/7, 365. So I'd be looking at what processes within my manufacturing operation could be done through digitization. And we know what that means. People are less needed. I'd be looking at some of the things I'd be also looking to see what do we really need people for, and what role do they play. Now, in my business as a coach, there are things that I could do. I mean, I can envisage, I've got this headset that that I can put on, which gives me information about the person I'm talking to. Now, older people are going to be freaked out by that. I can imagine there'd be younger, like millennials and even younger people, who would say, oh, that's cool. You know, you can bring up on your head display information about you, so I don't have to remind you what I told you a year ago, you know. So there will be changes, and I need to be open. For me, I need to be open to that. I was telling people 10 years ago, they need to be open to the possibilities of blogging and, you know, and what then we came to call social media for their business.
Mm.
I need to be open to what's possible that I can do without, which will enhance the relationship I have with my client. Secondly, in my business, people are already using online bookkeeping services because the friendly bookkeeper down the road maybe not so necessary anymore. Learning about the industry, I can use artificial intelligence. I mean, I already use artificial intelligence. I use Google. I can use artificial intelligence to give me information about the industry I'm working with. If I have clients in the financial services industry, which I do, I need to keep up to speed with what's happening there, and I can join groups online. I can do searches which help me know what are the issues of the day, what are the things that they're worried about, all of that. Does that make sense?
As I said, that's making sense in how to keep up, but I'm thinking maybe your next point might help. That is, how do we avoid becoming redundant?
Okay, and this is my motto. My motto, which I just thought up working along the beach the other day, was be better than a robot. So this is a kind of, like Nike says, just do it. My thing, be better. So how can we better? We better by building the special human capabilities we have. And this is where what top coaches have said for a long time, that if you want to be a really good coach, you have to develop your own personal capacities for empathy, for being attuned to the other person, for what we used to, what I still call it, leaving your ego at the door, So there's a personal growth thing that goes with, this is the irony, to be better than a robot, you've got to be better at the things that humans do, which are things like compassion, things like understanding nuance. Thomas Leonard, whom I just referred to, I remember once he said, you should be willing to share with your client even an inkling that you have, and tell them, I haven't really thought this through. This is just and someone asked him what an inkling was, and he said, well, it's like the feeling you get in your little toe. It's very subtle. But sometimes that can be, we call it intuition, we call it gut feeling, whatever it is. It's something that maybe we haven't worked through in a linear, logical way. Now, I know that the technical experts will tell me that computers, artificial intelligence, are now learning to learn in a non-linear way. But the human brain is still a very powerful instrument, and we still have feelings that robots can be made to simulate, but they don't have the feelings. I read yesterday about, there's a robot that's been trained to answer questions and have a conversation in quite an interesting way, a bit weird at times, but this robot, and I haven't got the details at hand, I could get it if anybody wants them, but this robot, a year ago, when asked did it love humans, it said, I will kill all humans, So then a year later, the robot's been reprogrammed, and when it's asked what it feels about humans, it says, I love humans, And then the interviewer says, what is love? And the robot says, I don't understand the question. So there are things that we can do. So the discerning client, take two clients. One says, hey, Trish, I've just got this great robot that is going to coach me, and thanks very much, but I don't need you anymore. And the next person comes up, says, Trish, I checked that robot out. It's rubbish. I need you to help me because you understand me. You pick up on the vibes. You remind me of things that I know about myself, but are maybe not immediately obvious. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's something that we need to be fostering, and fostering now. Well, I call it our humanness.
Yes.
I think it's a way of, instead of looking at it with fear, we should be looking at how we can integrate the knowledge in that, because I can see a place for robots, for the questioning, for the techniques, for those people, maybe a first level, what I would maybe call, just off the top of my head, first level coaching. Basic, these are some of the strategies and techniques, and a robot could probably help with that. But where humans come in would be the second, third, or fourth level, where we have that actual connection.
I can see, I've thought of this more than once, I can see a value for me with my clients of having an app that they can put on their phone that reminds them of a conversation we had a year ago, 6 months ago, without them ringing me up. That's old-fashioned, isn't it? Writing me a letter that says, hey, Des, we talked about something 6 months ago, and I can't remember what it was, but it was something like, if you've got a Google-type machine on your computer, you've got an app that they can tap into and say, that's their coaching app, and they don't even have to call me, and they get that, or I can do the same thing. I can tap into that
and check back on a conversation I had with them. And it's not just a recording, it'll zero in on the particular issue. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, and that's...
So that can enhance the coaching offering that I offer. I can say one of the things you get if you work with me is this app that even when you're in another country or it's a different time zone or whatever and I'm not online or whatever, you can check in with me and leave me a message overnight, which will... and the app will remind me when I get your message of previous discussions about this issue, what I've already told the client, etc. So that enhances the relationship. It by no means diminishes it.
It could be almost like cloning yourself with a robot.
We're going to have to, as coaches, you know, I think, and I say this to myself, have to kind of up our game. But the game is like the wonderful concept Tim Galway wrote a book called The Inner Game of Tennis and then went on to talk about inner game of business and so on. But the inner game that of ourselves, of growing as people, of, learning keeping ourselves well informed, but also doing whatever it takes, you know, journaling, meditation, a whole lot of things that the robots are going to take a very, very long time to catch up with. I just can't see a robot doing it more than a simulation of meditation. But who knows? There are, I have these, yeah, go on.
I would say I'm a very big sci-fi reader. And so I've been reading science fiction books for a long time people have postulated what robots can do and how they can. So, from my open mindedness and from where I come from, I can actually see a time, but I can't see it for a millennia, maybe. I don't know. It depends how quickly things in technology goes. But I still think, even if you get to a robot that gets to that particular time, I guess from my point of view, if a robot gets to that sort of thing, they're probably not a robot anymore.
Yeah, it's some sort of
by our technical term of what a robot is.
Yeah.
In that respect.
So it is. It can be scary, and for people whose industries are being, think of truck drivers and I don't know how many truck drivers there are in the United States, but it's perfectly conceivable that. Within a foreseeable future, maybe 10 years, maybe 20 years, but probably not longer than that, most of the, especially the long-haul trucks, will be autonomous vehicles, like the self-driving cars they already have. And there are people already have that technology. I mean, I think I've seen a demonstration of that, but I've certainly read about it and seen pictures of autonomous vehicles. Now, all sorts of things have to happen for that to be possible, and there'll be government regulations and all sorts of things, but the technology is already there. So what happens to all those truck drivers? You know, if somebody has been, when they left school, they started driving trucks, unless they became like Lindsay Fox, a billionaire, they probably haven't done much else, and they may not have had a lot of schooling or certainly post high school. And suddenly, nobody wants a truck driver anymore. You know, what do they do? So that's going to affect millions of people. And you could go through a number of industries. And what's happening now is this: people saying, "Oh well, you know, we outsourced some functions, and now we're bringing them back on. We're onshoring. We offshored them to India, to other developing countries. Now we're onshoring. They're not onshoring the people. They're onshoring." Software that does the job that used to be done by people that got sent off to some people and now they've developed the software to do it. Business process outsourcing is now business process automation and financial services outsourcing is now becoming financial services automation. So that's happening in a number of industries.
Okay, I'm just going to take a short break there, Des. I just want to do a couple of things. I'll be back with you in a minute. We are speaking with Des Walsh, and we've been looking at what the future is going to be with the onset of artificial intelligence, virtual reality. Specifically, we've been speaking about for coaches, But it really spreads over to every industry that you can be aware of. And Des has been sharing some really good and vital points of how you should be prepared for this and not caught out by hiding away from the fact that technology is going to come. You're listening to Step Up and Speak Out with Trish. And we come every second Friday. You can follow me on blogtalkradio.com/speakoutwithtrish. Press that little red button so that you never miss out on an episode and on hearing things like we have been discussing with Des at this moment. So, Des, we've been going over what you're seeing the future is now and highlighting some of the things that could be are happening, not saying could be happening, are happening, and how we can't hide our head in the sand. The question I'd like to pose you, what do you think we should be doing with our schools, with our young people? Mm. Is this being addressed now, or are they still not catching up with what, you know, they're encouraging people to go into industries that, let's face it, we've just said there are so many that artificial intelligence, automation, those things are impacting. Are the schools keeping up? Are our young people going in the right places?
Well, as a former, for not a very long time, but for some time in earlier life, a school teacher, I've always had great sympathy for teachers trying to keep up. and because kids can be so smart and they can leave you, you know, dumbfounded when you think you've had your head around something and they're ahead of you. But I think a lot of teachers are really trying to do their best. I think that, I worked, one of my career moves was working with the innovation programs of the Australian Schools Commission. So we're doing nationwide innovation. And I think that part of the challenge from then and now is that people want big solutions, you know. And one of the programs I had the great pleasure of working on was one which was called it was really a classroom-based innovation program. So what we did was to get individual teachers to put up their ideas for innovation and in the teaching process and then funding that directly. And the state governments hated it because it took away control from them. I don't think teachers' unions liked it. You know, there was a lot of opposition, but some wonderful things happened, but they weren't very easy to evaluate. people always want kind of centralized solutions, but I think that what we need to do is to create a culture where innovation at the school level is encouraged. Now, how can that best be done? There's a big emphasis on teaching kids science, technology, mathematics, and so on. I come from a humanities background, and I believe that you've got to be very careful not to have a lot of technologists coming through, because some of those technologists that emerge are going to be find themselves left behind because the technology will have overtaken what they've learnt. But I think that people are going to be in demand if they have a broader education. So I think that there's whatever is done, it should not do away with language learning, history learning, and other things. You know, how society works. I mean, a lot of kids don't actually understand how society works in terms of government, in terms of court, justice system, etc. So coding. A lot of people are very keen on kids learning coding. I don't know about that, but I think it's a great idea if kids learn to code. But the big thing is not to be locked into a current concept of what employment will look like in 10, 20, 30 years' time. They've got all sorts of ways of encouraging imagination, which might be as simple as, like environmental projects of kids going out into the bush and observing and collecting and studying nature could be just as important as a class on science or mathematics. So it's about getting the balance. I don't know enough about the current state of play in schools, but from what I can gather from some parents, it's not really forward-looking enough. And not with this big picture of us as human beings living in a world where a lot of human beings, what a lot of human beings used to do is being done by robots. I would like to see a future where the robots actually make our lives much more enjoyable. There's less drudgery that so many people now don't like the jobs they're working in, but maybe the robots can free us up. But then that will need major social changes. People are always already talking about having a kind of basic living wage that people get as long as they contribute in some way, but not trying to pretend that we can provide full employment for everybody forever. We can't do it now.
So you're fading a little bit there on some of the comments, but I think we've got the gist of what you were saying. You just fade a little bit. Can you just repeat? I just want, there was something you're saying about the innovation that you did with the school level. Can you just repeat that again, what that was about?
Okay, so can you hear me clearly now?
Yeah.
Okay, so what we did was, instead of having a centralized innovate, we had some central innovation programs, but instead of focusing just on centralized things, everybody, like a Napoleonic system, at any moment that you pick, that the same thing is being taught in every school around the country, that we felt that there was the future lay in giving teachers more capacity to develop innovative activities within their own classrooms. And so what I'm saying is, so that's one thing. So we provided money for good, exciting projects in particular schools or particular regions or particular classrooms, not statewide or system-wide. And I think that that's where, we need to develop the skills of teachers, and we need to give them encouragement to develop a broad range of human skills in the students, not just the science, technology, engineering, mathematics, the STEM program. That's good, but it's not the whole human being. And I think what's the people who are going to succeed most in this future robotized world will be the ones who have a range of skills, who can be adaptable, who can have the kind of conversation we're having now, which looks to the future and says, how can we change? How can we change ourselves? How can we be better human beings? Because these robots are doing stuff that we used to be good at and nobody wants us to do anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I do agree that we need to be a lot more flexible. And I also do agree with your other statements about that we try and lock our kids in sometimes with the technology in the future, and it's moving so fast. By the time you get out of school, you're in a problem. I mean, and funnily enough, just to share with you, this actually happened to me many years ago, and I'm going back to when I graduated, so that was like more than 30 years ago. The same sort of thing happened to me. So technology goes along. I decided to do a course, and when I started it, there was nobody doing it. It was a very shortage. By the time I finished it in 2 years, there were so many people doing it, I had to go find another job because I couldn't get a job. And that's sort of like, going back, let me say, 40 years. And so that wasn't even big technology then. That was just a new industry coming into play. If that could happen, then we're looking here, technology is expanding 3 times as fast as that. So this is what's happening with our people coming out. Unless you can be flexible and holistic and do look at some of the humanistic things as well, we are going to find ourselves on the left foot.
Just one thing. It's really interesting when you start to read up about or learn more about what's happening with artificial intelligence. Some things that were called artificial intelligence a couple of years ago are just so normal now, they're not called artificial intelligence anymore. Mm. So the term is being used for what's more at the cutting edge. So we have to learn faster, and above all, I think we have to, be more rounded, interesting, capable human beings. Be better than a robot.
Absolutely. Because if you're not, you're going to be made redundant, I think. I can see that on the line. Just a couple of quick questions before we run out of time, too much time. Can you share with what's probably one of the biggest insights or lessons that you'd like to pass on to our listeners?
On all of this?
Where you're coming from as a coach, whichever area.
I think that one of the things is that, it might seem kind of banal in a way, but we need to, we have a challenge, and I think a lot of young people have a challenge of being locked into computers. And, you know, I was speaking to a man the other day, and his younger child, who's maybe five, said if his iPad is taken away or the computer gets switched off, he has a tantrum because he's so locked into that, you know. And he's the father is mystified about what to do, you know, about that. So we have to think about the fact that we can become isolated from one another. So human contact is important. So I say to people, make sure you don't lose the company of people you can have these conversations with. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you want to flourish in this new world of, you know, robotized activities, work on your own personal development. You know, corny as it may seem, it's a sort of personal growth thing. And I think things like meditation are going to become more important to keep our balance, because the world, things are moving so fast. Does that help?
Yes, yes, I agree with you. It is. The world is moving so fast. We've got so many people who are overwhelmed and stressed.
Yes.
And I think if we take a step back and become more in touch with who we are as humans, not only is that going to help us with being overwhelmed and stressed, it's going to help us find where our place is in this new technology.
Yeah. Somebody famous said, years and years ago, all the problems of the world would be solved if we could learn to sit still in a room for half an hour.
That would be good. Without a computer.
Without a computer. Or a smartphone. Or a headset.
Yes. Okay. But before we finish, one final question I ask all my guests. What do you think makes a great speaker and why?
Now, that's a great question. Thinking about great speakers, I think it is empathy. I think it is being able to demonstrate that you have walked in the shoes of, or you know what it's like to be, have some sense of what it's like to be in the shoes of the people in your audience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you for that, Des. I absolutely agree with you there. Now, you have a special offer for our listeners. Would you like to share that?
You've probably got it right in front of you, Trish, because I'm...
Yeah, social media strategy checklist you sent us. Just a quick thing about that.
Yeah, so it's a something that I've tried to simplify the process. I developed a social media strategy framework for small business, and I discovered, because I shared it around with quite a few people, and I discovered it was being also used by NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. So it works also very big organizations. A number of people have found it useful. So this is the checklist. This isn't the whole strategy, but for people to go through that and say, instead of starting with, do we need a Facebook account, work through the strategic points, and the technology is almost last, because you've got to really work out what you want to achieve. You know all these things. What do I want to achieve? What technology might help, and so on. So, yeah, that's available if people want to. And I've got a link for that, I think, haven't I?
Okay. That's going to be – I'll put the link in on the replay. It can go to deswalsh.com. It's deswalsh.com/smstrategy-checklist-register, and you can go there to get it.
Yep.
And, of course, you can contact Des on his website, and that's deswalsh.com. And Des is on LinkedIn, so if you're on LinkedIn, make sure you connect with him there. And he's on social media. Des, thank you very much for your time and spending it discussing. I mean, we could discuss – I would love to sit down. We could discuss this over a dinner for hours on
I believe so.
Robotics and virtual reality, and there's a whole lot of things that we didn't even touch on, holograms and how that comes
into it. We didn't
get
to, there's a whole lot of stuff you can do with training, with augmented reality.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, there's some really good stuff that helps you
absolutely.
Get to the global world. And
I didn't want to be
too
gloomy about it. I mean, I'm excited about the possibilities,
Yeah, there is. I'm excited. It's just you should be always maintaining your balance. And I think the issue where people get scared is when they don't actually inform themselves and then find their niche within it and let that overwhelm them. And that's where people get worried and scared, and we have all the bad issues because people let it catch up with them.
Yeah.
In that respect. Okay, thanks very much, Des. I really appreciate you being on the show this morning, and I hope to catch up with you again.
Absolutely.
Soon.
Thanks, Trish. And I'm sorry about the technology problems, but I think we got through them reasonably well.
We've got through them, and I'm hoping that down the track we might have you back again to discuss this further. It's a very hot topic.
Wonderful.
And especially maybe after your presentation in December.
Yes.
I think that would be a great presentation. If anybody's in Colombo, any coaches going to the international conference at Sri Lanka, Des is presenting the topic, coaching in the cyber physical world, and I think it would be a very good one for you to mark on your calendars to go and see.
And I'm trying to get a recording of it for those who can't. Okay, thanks, Trish.
That'll be good. Bye, Des. Okay,
bye.
People, as usual, I finish with a quote, and my quotes this morning, today, this one is from Diane Ackerman. It says, artificial intelligence is growing up fast, as our robots with facial expressions can elicit empathy and make your mirror neurons quiver. And that's, I think, summing up what we've been talking about with Des this morning about be aware with artificial intelligence. But I think one of the things that I'd like to highlight from a conversation with Des is that be aware of the meaning of artificial intelligence. The definition of that is moving just as fast as development. And you don't realize that, as Des mentioned, some things we called artificial intelligence yesterday are just normal apps that we use today. So be aware of what we're looking at. To counter that, I found another quote that I think resonated with me by Stephen Covey. To excel at the highest level, or any level really, you need to believe in yourself. And hands down, one of the biggest contributors to my self-confidence has been private coaching. And I think that, to me, countered the previous quote, because to me that spoke about the humanness of coaching, which is what Des was highlighting, of how coaches can find their place to be better than a robot. Yes, I think robots are going to be able to help us. They're going to be a great tool to help us with our coaching, to delve into some of those apps and those questions and things. But I think Stephen Covey highlighted the fact that the private coaching and the self-confidence and the need to believe in yourself, that's going to come from other humans. That's going to come from coaches who, as Des mentioned, have been there, done that, and are walking in the same shoes, as you said, for speakers in the audience. So that's where you need to develop and expand your humanness, because that is what people who are looking for high-level top coaches are going to be looking for in the future. Okay, you've been listening to Step Up and Speak Out with Trish. You can contact me at info@trishel.com.au or connect with me on Facebook at Trishel Innovative Communication Training or Trish Springsteen Speaking. Please go to my website, trishspringsteen.com. You can book me to speak there at your event, at your next meeting, if you've got an event meeting or facilitating a retreat that you'd like me to speak at. And follow me, please do follow me, at blogtalkradio.com/speakoutwithtrish, and press that red button and you will never miss out on an interview. Until next time, be awesome, be human, and follow your own self-development. Bye.